Is this a Rustin Dodd request?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is
one of his requests. It's one of his bands.
I've got a rotation.
Help me out.
Help him out, Russ. Titus Andronicus?
Titus Andronicus.
A little bit of a deeper cut. Yeah, this is Titus Andronicus.
I've heard the name. I don't know him.
They've kind of gone away over the last 3 to 4 years. Kind of on a sabbatical.
It sounds a little like British punk.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
I mean, no. They're from New Jersey.
He's like, yeah, but no.
I mean,
it kind of sounds a little...
You can hear it.
Clash
but
or whatever.
Yeah, no. Not... Yeah. Not from Britain.
Okay. New Jersey's
same
similar.
Thing.
Yeah, what's going on, Rustin? How are you, man?
I'm doing well. It's a day off. Is today the first day of summer? Is that?
Yesterday was.
Yesterday.
I believe. Yesterday was the summer solstice, I believe.
Correct.
Oh, it's the 22nd. I'm off by a day.
My son was baffled by this concept because he heard that on the radio when we were driving around yesterday. He said, wait a second, the pool's been open, you know, for a while. And I said, well, buddy, this is scientifically, this is the first day of summer. But from our calendar, the first day of summer for me is Memorial Day, right?
Yeah.
And then Labor Day is the end of summer. Like, that's really where we like define the start and end of summer from a social calendar perspective, right?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. We got that sorted. On to the next topic. Let's talk coffee. No. We're going to get into all these things. You've been having, you know, you have an interesting scenario right now, Rustin, because you're writing some fun, like, ancillary stories that people love to jump on board, like this Miguel Cabrera's bat.
Yes.
Doing the damage for Salvador Perez yesterday. This barista that is Peter Moylan that's making this concoction for the players. It's got them started. But then there's also like a lot of actual real baseball stuff going on with the team that's all of a sudden relevant again. That's got to be kind of fun right now. I mean, that's a pretty good confluence of stuff for you to cover right now.
It's been an interesting couple of weeks. I mean, I was in San Diego, then San Francisco, which is never a bad week.
Yep.
The Royals were playing well.
Yep.
There was lots of interesting, you know, I want to say, you know, being around the people ask me these kind of questions all the time, you know, like, what is like the vibe in the clubhouse right now? And Ned Yost would dispute this a little bit, but it's certainly been like a more positive vibe. It just feels like they've kind of gotten something back over the last couple of weeks. Not that it was ever an especially, you know, negative place to be. And when you're winning games, obviously it's going to help, but it just feels like they've sort of gotten back that feeling over the last couple of weeks, and you could sort of just sense it. But yeah, the West Coast road trip was successful. There were some interesting stories that came out of that. And then they came back into town, and it seems like, you know, they still got it kind of going.
So let me play amateur psychologist or whatever here. It almost felt like the beginning of the year there was this, I'll use the analogy that Buster Olney used earlier, which is like a senior class that's already accomplished a whole lot. And his analogy was, you know, you don't want to pull the rug out from under your seniors, you know, if they have this chance to have one more great year. But there's also a term called senioritis, right?
Yeah.
Which is like a lot of different things, but some of it is like, man, this is my last year. There's a little bit of anxiety that goes along with it. There's a little bit of stress. And it just kind of seemed like some of that was getting to the guys a little bit, like, because a lot of guys are in their contract years and there's a lot to process there. And it almost feels like at some point they just said, screw it, let's just play baseball and not worry about that stuff. Do you think there's anything to just kind of finally just deciding, let's not worry about any of those things and let's just go play like we used to?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something to that. I think guys, they got off to a slow start, especially offensively, and I think they did press a little bit. Because of they probably felt the kind of the immediacy of, okay, we need to get off to a good start. And then when they, you know, had a bad week or two, they let it turn into 3 or 4, then they go through a 9-game losing streak. No, I think there is something tied to the fact of what all these guys have coming in the future and their contract status and the fact that they sense this is their last run with this kind of group and the way they got off to that start. You know, what turned it around? I think, you know, they obviously started hitting better. Was that some sort of, you know, mental hurdle they had to get over. I mean, that's hard to say. You know, maybe they just made some adjustments. Maybe they just sort of relaxed. You know, Eric Hosmer would say he just sort of, he didn't necessarily make any sort of big adjustment. He just started relaxing and focusing on each at bat. And that sounds very baseball and cliche, but, you know, I don't know exactly what turned it around, but I mean, they were obviously not a team that was going to go 10-20 every 30 game stretch. And, I always kind of sensed that they would get back to 500
mm-hmm.
at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they kind of went on a little bit of a surge and then they got back to, like, I think they were like 24-32. And then I was like, well, okay, maybe not, but it did seem like they would have one of their kind of vintage Royals runs in them. And then I'm still not convinced what that means over the long haul, but it certainly means, you know, this is a team with good players and they have this sort of capability to play this kind of ball.
Did the additions of Whit Merrifield and Jorge Bonifacio and then the next step of putting them at the top of the order?
Oh, no doubt.
Is that what turned it around?
I mean, if you look at their offensive numbers from their leadoff spot for the first month and a half when they had first Gordon and then Escobar for a while and there were a few others here and there. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, and they were hitting so many solo home runs and they couldn't get anybody on base. And
mm-hmm.
So those, yeah, I think that's, those have been key. If it's, you know, it's interesting because they have I haven't checked in the last couple of days. I'm fairly certain they're still the worst offense in the American League. Because even after their West Coast road trip, they scored like 55 runs
yeah.
in 9 games. They were still behind the Oakland A's. But I don't even know where I was going with that. But I guess my point is that as they've got like 5 or 6 guys who are having, you would say, good offensive seasons. And then they've had, you know, Gordon, Escobar, a couple other holes. So in April when Hosmer and Kane and those guys weren't necessarily hitting, then it was like 4 or 5 holes. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
They are still dead last in the American League in runs scored. They are, I'm really good at math here. Let's see. I can't believe how much I'm struggling to process these numbers right here. They are 18 runs below, I beg your pardon, they're 22 runs below the Oakland A's.
And they've got, I mean, right now,
last place.
Jorge Bonifacio is cooled off a little bit, and Whit Merrifield has as well. But they've got 4 of their regulars have OPSs over 819, and then Merrifield and Bonifacio are both over 750. So, I mean, that's 6 guys in their lineup that are basically above average offensive players right now, or, you know, right around mm-hmm. there. You know, that should have the makings of a offense that you would think would be about league average, but hasn't necessarily turned out that way. Although they have sort of correcting itself, I guess you would say,
yeah,
over the last few weeks.
Yeah, they've made progress. To get into something that Buster Olney said when we had him on the show earlier today, he talked to Dayton Moore this week, and I know you talked to Dayton Moore and people in the organization and in other organizations as well. He said something that just grabbed my attention. He said the Royals at this point are much more likely to become buyers than they are sellers. That stood out to me because I think what, at least for me, the whole debate that we've asked you about every single week since they got off to the horrible start was, should they sell or should they stand pat?
Yeah.
You know, like I haven't really thought of them in terms of a team that could or would go out and acquire players for a push unless it got really late and they were really going for it, you know? That was the first time I'd heard somebody say, no, they're more likely to be buyers than sellers. How likely is that? He didn't say they're likely. He just said more likely than they are to sell. Do you have a feel? How much more do they have to win for Dayton Moore and or, you know, David Glass to decide, yeah, let's see if we can acquire a couple of pieces?
You know, I would put it this way. Dayton always seems to have sort of the philosophy of you let your players dictate, you know, whether or not you're going to buy or sell. And I know that seems obvious because he's talking about winning or losing, but he's also talking about how much trust or loyalty do you have in a certain group of players? Mm-hmm. And in 2014, for instance, they were, what were they, you know, three or four games under, you know, right before the trade deadline, maybe got right to 500. They didn't sell, but they certainly didn't
go
out.
Pat.
Yeah, they stood pat. They didn't go out and buy either, because thinking being, well, okay, this team hasn't, they've shown enough, but they haven't necessarily shown that they're a playoff team, so we're not necessarily going to go out and spend prospects or, you know, divest part of the future in this team. 15 was different. The team went out. They had a great first half. They proved that they were one of the best teams in the American League, and the front office felt like, okay, we need to supplement this. We need to, you know, basically as a, you know, to ante up for the players who had performed that well. So my thinking is that it's sort of the same sort of calculus. I don't know if the fact that this is the last year with this group and that there is a small window, I don't know if that will change it, but I do sense that if they're still hanging right around that 500 mark in mid-July, I don't necessarily sense the Royals being aggressive buyers at that point. I guess if, you know, you'd also have to look at what the division looks like and and what the wild card standings are at that point. Potentially, maybe they could go find a piece that would help them. But I don't, unless they go on, you know, they continue this pace that they're on right now and they're 5 to 10 games over 500 in a month, I don't sense that they would be aggressively looking to add.
So one of the things Buster said that they could do, since, because I said, well, who do they have left to trade? I mean, they've got some prospects, but they don't have many. They traded so many of their prospects away. And again, we'll say it every time, great job, because they got a World Series out of it. No one's complaining about that. But who do they have to trade? And he said, well, sometimes when you get to the trade deadline, there are teams that are out of it that would just like to save a little bit of cash. And if they've got a guy that's toward the end of his contract and they owe him some money, they'll trade you for less of a prospect if you'll just take the salary off their hands, and that they could trade for that kind of guy. But I remember you covered it a lot in the offseason that basically at that time, David Glass was like, look, there's no more money. You know, there's no more money to spend. Do you think that if they got to that point, is David Glass willing to pony up a little bit more money again for one last push?
Potentially, I suppose. I don't know if I know the answer.
Yeah.
And how much money is that, and what does it look like? I do think, and this is sort of a related question, but it's something that maybe has not been talked about enough. I do think we need to think about buying, selling, all these sort of things in terms of the financial aspects for the organization, whether or not you're talking about trading guys to cut salary during the second half of the season, or whether or not you're talking about standing pat and staying with this group because you want the attendance and gate to not, you know, take a nosedive during the second half of the season when your fan base senses, you know, that you've waved the white flag. And I think sometimes we get caught up in thinking about it in terms of, you know, the hardcore baseball fans who understand the aspects of, okay, they're going to go out and trade all these guys and get more prospects for the future, and they're going to rebuild the farm system, and they're going to, and that's an easy sell for people that are focusing on the Royals on a day-to-day basis, like most radio listeners or people that are reading the newspaper every day. But for the other, you know, 75% of the fan base that goes to baseball games, you know, once or twice you know, a season or, you know, whatever it is, those people want to either, one, go out and watch a team that is competing and winning, or two, they want to go out and see, you know, Eric Hosmer and Salvador Perez and Mike Moustakas and Lorenzo Cain and those guys. And, you know, if the team is dramatically different during the second half of the season, that does have some sort of financial impact. So I guess that's a roundabout way of saying I don't know the answer in terms of could they add salary. I guess we just don't know that. But we also should think about it in terms of other ways. Could that prohibit them from, you know, dumping a handful of guys because they are also, you know, worried about the financial hit on the back end?
I'll take it to another step. I think you make a great point. It's something we've maybe mentioned a couple of times on this show, but we haven't spent a lot of time on it. I think that there's that does add the incentive to Dayton more to be as patient as possible with this group of guys and hope that they can win some games. Your colleague and our we'll just say our own Sam Mellinger, he comes on every Monday, wrote a bit back in May about how preliminary discussions are underway between the Royals and Fox Sports Kansas City, right?
Yeah.
That contract is through 2019, so who knows how long it's going to take them to work that deal, but the TV numbers were starting to drop rapidly when the team was losing games in April, right?
They were still high relative to other markets around baseball, but they were significantly down from the record highs of the last few years.
Look, Royals fans watch, I mean, we had the rights here to the Royals when they were the worst that they've ever been, the worst four-year period in franchise history. And I would look at the TV numbers, and they're still pulling sixes back then when they were terrible. But, you know, when they were, like, last couple years, they were pulling 15s on, like, a nightly basis. They were setting all these records and everything. And that's certainly what you want to go into your contract negotiations with, right? You know, and so I think that that has something to do with it, too. Like, you know, talking about a huge TV deal that's going to determine the financial fate of the organization. You want to put yourself in the best negotiating position possible.
I think that's right, although I always tend to sort of push back because the people that are, you know, and I'll defer to people that are experts on media rights deals and all those sort of things, but if you talk to people with the Royals over the last few years about their next TV deal and how they're playing well and how they're really well positioned to go into that deal, a lot of times they would sort of gently push back and say, you know, in the end, what really matters about the television rights deals is the amount of households you have in your market. It's not necessarily how many people are watching the games on a nightly basis. That's a nice kind of negotiating carrot or thing to take into it, but it's not the, you know, the first thing that you're going to bring up as you start to discuss the next deal. I mean, there still is a limited amount of people in this general area compared to, you know, 25 other markets in baseball. And that's going to dictate what the next television deal is, not how good the Royals are playing on the field. Although, I mean, I don't know that it's a, you know, a meaningless thing or that there's no value in having a good team and people are watching you at record highs. But I just don't think that's the first thing that comes
in the deal. It's certainly not the most important part of it. Like you said, I mean, TV households is what makes the difference. And I mean, for example, we're talking about how the Royals are still getting some of the best ratings. Yeah. But there's still fewer people actually watching the Royals than even like if some of the Yankees are getting bad, quote unquote, ratings. Way more people are watching those games because there's millions of more TV households. And plus, it's also what you get to charge each, you know, for each subscriber and all of that. So, yeah, it's certainly not the most important thing, but it's the thing the Royals can control.
Yeah.
They can't control how many TV households there are. They can at least control how many people watch to the extent that they can be good. If they can be good, more people watch, right? So, you know, that's all I'm pointing out is, you know, I just don't think you want to go into your TV negotiating deal having sold off all your best players, you know? Like, that's just not where they want to be. Now, maybe this deal doesn't get worked out before the season's over anyways, and it's a moot point, but I think it backs up what you're saying about there's financial reasons for David Glass to try to go for it again this year, even if it's just ticket sales, you know? So we'll see what they do. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll get into, we got some injury news, you know, trying to see who's coming back from injury, especially between Danny Duffy and Nate Karns. And some other issues with Rustin Dodd. He's nice enough to spend some time in studio with us on his off day. Wow. What a guy. What a guy Rustin Dodd is.
Yeah.
Could be out golfing right now.
Big thanks, Rustin.
You know, there are zero off days during the baseball season, I feel like.
For you.
Yeah.
I mean, the players, they're off today. They're not doing anything. They're having fun. You know? Ned Yost is going and ordering coffee under his own name. Probably somewhere. We'll take a break. We'll talk with Rustin Dodd after this. We've got Rustin Dodd in studio. If you got any questions for Rustin, you can tweet him to us. I'm sure he spends a lot of time answering them. How do you spend the rest of the off day? Do you get any time off today? You said there's no off days.
Well, I see. If anybody wants to tune in, I will be doing a Facebook Live episode with Vahe Gregorian of the Kansas City Star from our newsroom at noon.
Wow.
So follow the If you want to go on Facebook, you can find the True Blue Kansas City Star page. You can hit like on there, and then all my stories and all the Stars Royals coverage will flood into your Facebook news feed.
There you go.
So we're doing that, and then I've been working on a, I don't know if I'm going to get to it today, or if it'll be in tomorrow's paper or what, but I have a story on Scott Alexander to write.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's having a great year, but the story is a little bit about how he developed this sinker that he throws. You know, Dave Island has even compared the sinker to Zach Britton's sinker.
Wow.
They kind of call him like a mini Zach Britton. Obviously, he doesn't throw as hard as Zach Britton. Obviously, he's not going to probably become one of the best relievers in the league. But in terms of style, he looks very similar to the way Zach Britton pitches. And Scott Alexander, if you look at his numbers, he's throwing basically one pitch, and he has like a 1.25, 1.3 ERA right now. He's throwing his sinker like 95% of the time. Just sort of how stories about his, how he developed that pitch and how he kind of gained the confidence to just go ahead and throw it every single time. And, you know, he was also, I'm kind of giving away the entire story here, but, you know, people kind of missed this, but last year during the season, he was diagnosed with diabetes. And that was one of the reasons he was weak. He didn't have any like strength. He didn't know what was wrong with him. They figured that out last summer. He got on, you know, to the right, you know,
insulin and
nutrition and all that sort of thing. And so he kind of, those two things have kind of helped him have this kind of breakout year.
So speaking of that, Travis Wood, is he back? Is he?
I guess. I mean, I think he's back to being Travis Wood, which is what the guy that they were hoping when they signed. I mean, they were kind of wanting a guy for some depth in the rotation and another lefty in the bullpen after Brian Flynn got hurt. And I don't know if they expected him to be some sort of dominant reliever, but he was so bad for the first 2 months of the season, specifically in terms of his walk rate. I mean, he was just walking everybody. It does seem like he's found his command, and you know, at the least they've got, you know, another guy in there that they can kind of use in kind of low to mid leverage situations.
All right, let's talk about the two guys in the rotation that are still injured right now, Danny Duffy and Nate Karns. I'll ask you what you like to ask Ned Yost. Where are they?
Yes. right now they're probably hanging out in somewhere in Leawood, having a nice little breakfast. So Danny Duffy is going to throw again tomorrow, I believe. He's
bullpen session.
Essentially, yeah. I mean, essentially, right now this is where Danny Duffy is. He's likely going to be back right around the All-Star break. Let's just get that out of the way.
That's the most important thing to know.
And I sense that it'll be after the All-Star break. I just don't think that there is time for him in the schedule to get back before. The All-Star break starts on June 10th, I believe, or maybe it's June 11th, or July 10th, July 11th, sorry. He's essentially got one more side session in Kansas City, then he'll likely go on a minor league rehab stint, but he's probably going to need 3 minor league starts to build up his pitch count. So that's 15 days, essentially, right there of a rehab stint. And so you just do the math. There's just not a lot of time to get back before the All-Star break, and I don't think they'll push it. So I think he'll be in position, if everything goes right and he looks good on the rehab stints, to essentially be back in the rotation shortly after the All-Star break. Karns is a little bit more murky. You know, he had the first issue on May 19th. This was in Minnesota. It was a Friday. He had an MRI, no structural damage. The Royals said, oh, okay, we're going to put him on the DL, but it doesn't look serious. Like, Karns thought he would be back in, you know, 10 to 15 days. The Royals thought that. But he had this tightness in the top of his forearm that just didn't really go away, and it would not really allow him to finish pitches when he was, you know, throwing side sessions or bullpens. And it just wasn't allowing the command, and it wasn't really going away. So the Royals kind of didn't want to send him out on a rehab stint until that went away. It didn't. They finally, last week in San Diego, they shut him down. They sent him to New York to see another doctor. Still no structural damage, but they gave him some treatment. I'm guessing they gave him some anti-inflammatories type medication, but I suspect he was on that before anyway, so I'm not totally certain on that. But anyway, so he was didn't throw for a week. He started throwing again yesterday, but now, I mean, we're talking about, you know, these throwing programs go pretty slowly.
Yeah.
He played catch yesterday. He'll play catch again in a few days. So, I mean, we're talking probably another, you know, 3 to 4 weeks at least in terms of him building up his arm to where he's able to pitch again. So I would be, if you're expecting him back anytime soon, I would probably try to exercise some patience.
So are we going to get to see Matt Strom in the starting rotation for a while?
Yeah, I mean, I think at least he's going to get a couple more starts to build up to about 100 pitches, and then I think they'll just evaluate him. I mean, if he's, I don't know what other options you really have, so that's part of it, but I think they're hoping that once he builds up and gets a little bit under his feet, then he gives him, you know, something at the back end of the rotation. I think there are some, you know, there's some certainly some concerns there whether or not the velocity holds up, the quality of the secondary pitches when those have to be used, you know, a lot more when you're going two or three times through a lineup. But, you know, the Royals believe in him, so we'll see.
And like you said, I mean, what are the other options right now? I mean, that's part of the question, right?
Yeah.
There's not much else there.
I mean, if Duffy comes back in at the All-Star break, and then you could look at who's pitching better besides between Strom and Junis, but, you know, we'll see.
We will see. Rustin Dodd is in studio with us real quick. Breaking news. The Oakland Raiders, Jake, and Derek Carr have finalized an extension. Sources tell ESPN's Adam Schefter it is expected to pay him about $25 million per year. So, for reference, Andrew Luck currently has the most lucrative annual contract as a quarterback at $24.6 million per year. So, it will be interesting to see what kind of money the Raiders have to spend on other things now that they're actually going to have to pay Derek Carr like one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Because, you know, they've been getting that production, but now they got to pay for it. What do you think? Your reaction, Jake?
No, I mean, it's not surprising. Shane came back here. Oh, did you see the story? Like, it's nice. It's great. But, of course, he's going to become the highest paid quarterback. I mean, and then until what? Until
the next really good quarterback gets a contract.
It's Luck, and then it's Carr, and then it's the next, you know, who, I don't know, Mariota, the next big young quarterback. It's just, you know, it's a catchy headline, but if you realize what's going on, it's the position. It's the price of business. It's the price of the NFL. And, I mean, good for the Raiders, I guess. I mean, that I'd trade them in a heartbeat for their quarterback position and the Chiefs are in. But
It does, though, go to serve when people talk about how much money Alex Smith is making, and I've been pointing out for a while that he's actually making about what an average quarterback in the NFL makes. This kind of backs that up. And what we've seen a lot of times is...
It's average now, though. It was a little bit above average when he signed it 4 years ago.
Yeah, maybe. Last couple of years, it's been about right on par for where he ranks, you know, when we do our little quarterback rankings.
Kind of a moot point, but yep.
Yeah. But I think what it does point out is a lot of NFL teams, you know, when they reach a lot of success, it's when they can get those quarterbacks to produce like that before their big contract.
Right. Russ Wilson,
Joe Flacco.
Yep.
Now they didn't get to a Super Bowl, the Raiders, because you know, maybe because he got hurt. Who knows what would have happened if he hadn't gotten hurt last year. But now they've got to pay him and Khalil Mack. I think Khalil Mack's deal's up next year. So it'll start transforming the way the Raiders have to do business as well. All right. I just want to get that out there because that's kind of what's blowing up on Twitter right now. Derek Carr with a new $125 million contract,
pay
I think
him.
It is.
Pay yeah. that man his money.
Richest player in NFL history, Derek Carr. The richest Kansas City Star beat writer in, I don't know how
good
much.
Good segue.
Yeah,
yes, money, to, dude. Smooth.
There's flipping through his phone. Rustin Dodd will be back to talk more Royals baseball with us after this. We are wrapping things up with Rustin Dodd talking Royals baseball, the red hot Royals. Rustin Dodd got to write an article yesterday that used the phrase magic stick, which, as you know, with the sophomoric nature of this show, had our fans quite excited, Rustin. And you didn't even have to dig for it too much because Drew Butera just threw that one out there for you.
He did.
So Drew Butera is the reason that Salvador Perez ended up with Miggy Cabrera's bat.
Correct. So this, the way that Drew told the story was that when the Royals were playing the Tigers, I think that was in late May at Kauffman Stadium, I suspect that it was when Drew was playing and Cabrera was hitting, although he didn't stipulate that, so I'm kind of guessing, I suppose. But he ended up basically picking up Miguel Cabrera's bat as he was catching and said, you know, I kind of like the feel of this bat. This looks kind of cool. And so it was a little heavy for him. It was a 32-ounce bat, which is bigger than what Butera would use in the game. But he said he likes to swing like a heavier bat during batting practice. So he just sent over word to the Tigers clubhouse, like, hey, ask Miggy if he has like an extra bat, because these guys have, you know, dozens of bats that they travel with, if he would, you know, spare an extra bat so I can use it during batting practice. And Miggy is a very nice guy, so he sent over two. So Butera had two of these bats, and then apparently somewhere along the line, Salvador Perez saw the bat, kind of played around with it. He liked the feel of it. And so yesterday morning, Butera dropped off one of the bats in Sal's locker and said, hey, why don't you use it? And so that is why he was swinging Miguel Cabrera's bat yesterday and went 3-for-3 with obviously his first career grand slam. You know, I think you'd be surprised how often bats get traded around between teammates.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of times I said, well, I did that with my teammates' bat, but I don't remember.
It's rare you would think you would see a guy just having a bat from another team. I don't know if how rare that is, but it's certainly not, you know, you don't see it very often.
Here's what I think happened.
You got a conspiracy?
Yeah, well, it's not really even a conspiracy. It's just, this is just me being a critical thinker here. Drew Butera picked up Miguel Cabrera's bat and decided, I want Miguel Cabrera's bat because this guy won a triple crown and is going to be a Hall of Famer, and I could have one of his bats.
Well,
and
I mean,
he said, I like your bat. It's really nice. Can I? You got an extra one, maybe?
I thought the same thing too. That he just meant. I thought he just wanted it as a souvenir keepsake.
Yeah,
because that happens a lot too. Guys will ask for bats because they'll collect bats. They'll collect things.
Rex Hudler has the most amazing collection of artifacts from
Have
players.
You seen Boddicker's? His bat collection.
No, I have not seen Boddicker's.
I've seen both. I've been to Rex's, I've been to Boddicker's. Mm-hmm. They both have an amazing collection. But yeah, they both have bats from other players, and there's great stories behind all these bats. And I mean, it's not uncommon for a player to, you know, have an admiration for an opponent and then, you know, send a clubby over to their clubhouse and see if they, you know, they can get a bat from them.
Yeah.
And that's what I, you know,
that's
I
that's, what I'm
well,
saying.
That's what I thought too. Yeah. Although Drew, I mean, maybe he was just saying this, but
he denies that.
Well, he didn't deny it necessarily. As much as he said that he wanted to swing it during batting practice. So if he was going to be collecting this bat and keeping it for the future,
he wouldn't be hitting it in batting practice.
I mean, maybe he would be. It's not like you're, I mean, probably not going to break a bat during batting practice, but
never know.
It's not like he cares about keeping it in mint condition. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I mean, hey, whatever it is, it worked and it's got.
But yes, Drew's also said that he said, he thinks some guys in baseball just have magic sticks. And he said when he played with Joe Mauer in Minnesota, Joe Mauer had a magic stick. And so Miggy has a magic stick. And that, that you know, there's just hits and bats. Little baseball romanticism there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a word for it. On that note, what's the latest with Brian Flynn? I can't come up with a transition. Sorry, I can't.
We were talking about this during the.
I think there's some people in towns across the America that, you know, major league towns, that probably thought Derek Jeter might have had a magic stick. I don't know.
Look, there's all kinds of places we could go with this. Stephen St. John's not here to make some sort of Eric Hosmer joke right now. You know, so I just feel like we should just move on and let it stand on its own. Because, there's a lot of magic sticks out there, you know. And Derek Jeter had a lot of hits.
Yeah.
In those bats.
A lot of baskets passed the next day.
Oh, man. So like we were talking, Brian Flynn, what is going on? He has come off the DL here pretty soon, right?
Well, he's been on the 60-day disabled list since the, I don't say this often, since the barn incident during spring training.
Well, I lived on a farm for 2 years. Yeah, he had a barn incident.
Very, very kind of infamously had a barn accident right before spring training, fell through the roof, broke up, kind of fractured a vertebrae or something in his back, a serious injury.
Yeah.
But he was on the 60-day DL. He was throwing in Arizona. Now he's in Omaha doing a rehab stint. But you can only, as a pitcher, you can only stay on that rehab stint for 30 days. And I think his time on the 60-day DL is going to come up, which doesn't mean he has to be sent back to the roster in Kansas City. He just has to be put back on the 40-man roster. And right now, I'm just looking at his numbers. He has a 12.27 ERA in Omaha. He's given up 15 runs in 11 innings. So obviously still working back. But so that, at the least, the Royals later on this weekend on Sunday are going to have to make a 40-man roster move to create space for him if they want to add him back to the 40-man. So something to keep in mind. You know, there's guys that they could, you know, at the end of that roster, I'm trying to think of who, guys that aren't on their 25-man but down in the minors that they could jettison. But, you know, not a lot of spaces. You know, somebody like the reliever that was up, Seth Maness. Yeah. Thank you. You know, somebody like him would be expendable.
Thank you. I didn't say anything. You think yourself.
Yeah, would be expendable. But you know, I'm not saying who's it going to be, but they'll have to find a spot.
Well, a lot of people are wondering if Chris Young is going to have a spot on the roster for much longer. I mean, do you think they try to carry him all year? I mean, they don't seem to be able to pitch him in any games that matter at all.
It's a good question. I mean, obviously the performance is not there. A lot of the
The guy sucks.
Jake,
I mean, he's brutal.
Rustin Dodd is a professional, and he's covering the team. He's got to be measured.
I think
he does, but I don't.
The financial, I mean, like the financial aspects were what, I mean, they had Chris Young signed to a two-year $11.75 million deal. This is the second year of the deal. Yeah. There has been a financial incentive for them to try to get something out of Chris Young.
I think he's at $5.3 million for this part of the contract this year.
Yeah, but at some point, there comes a breaking point for any contract. They did it with Omar Infante with years left on the deal. Chris Young now is in his final year of the deal, so it'll come to a breaking point when the team decides that they can't afford to have him on the roster. So we'll see when that point is, but it has not come to this point.
Flynn's production though is not pushing in that direction in terms of what he's doing in AAA right now. So how soon do you think we see Jorge Soler, if any time?
Well, it's just a matter of where that roster spot comes from. Yeah. I mean, they didn't have a backup infielder before. They were carrying all these outfielders. If they wanted to go back to no backup infielder, they could bring him up. You know, people wonder about Brandon Moss, but he's sort of in that Chris Young category.
He's got another year left
on the deal, so you want value out of there. So if he continues to hit, I don't know. It's a good question, but there's some roster issues that they're going to have to sort through.
All right, you're going to be on Facebook Live with Vahe Gregorian at noon today.
Yep.
Is that right?
Thank you for not asking about the espresso, Nate. I'm kind of glad we didn't even get into that.
Are you glad or are you mad at me that I didn't bring it up?
I'm kind of glad you didn't.
I thought it was a great story, but then immediately every person...
You kind of ruined it, man.
You kind of ruined the mystique of it?
A little bit, but I do love good coffee.
Yeah. What's your go-to order? What do you got there?
This is just regular coffee from Happy Gillis, a great little breakfast spot in my neighborhood.
Okay. Happy Gillis. I'll have to check that out. You don't get the macchiato.
I'm more like a vanilla latte kind of guy, but regular coffee is fine with me.
There was a reporter who on Monday said, the only thing my producer cares about is this espresso machine. Like, that's all I'm here to get sound for. So, yeah. That's you started something there, buddy. All right, we'll watch on Facebook Live noon.
Thanks, Nate.
Yeah, I'm not going to watch, but I mean, I'm telling people to watch it because it's going to be great. You and look, Vahe Gregorian's awesome dude, and it's the True Blue, like the True Blue.
Yeah.
On Facebook. Rustin, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it, man. Thanks to all our guests today. Gary Lezak, Jarrett Sutton, Rustin Dodd, Buster Olney. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning on Sports Radio 810 WHB.